All right, what's up, man?
Dude, have you had any crazy water stories with the rain in New York?
Crazy water stories? Oh, yeah, no.
Do you follow What is New York? There's someone grilling outside. There was someone playing trumpet, walking around in water bucket shoes. Did you see the woman go into the subway? And she just went right in, man. She just walked right in, and the subway water was up to her waist.
What? I actually saw a video of like a sewer drain in a subway station that was like a water fountain, just like spraying all the way up.
If you want some entertainment, midday entertainment, go on Instagram and go to What is New York. And the last week has just all been the water stuff because we just got Elsa came by. Just destroyed the city. Like, the city is so ill-equipped to deal with like the smallest amount of like weather variation. It's hilarious. I got spared, fortunately, but I did step in a big puddle on the way to the gym. I was just like, why am I? I'm like walking with my umbrella. I'm like, why am I even trying to do this? I just like, oh, and these cars were splashing me. Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I lived in New York, you learn all the sidewalks to where you got to like cut in. If you're on the edge, you're just gonna get nailed.
Oh, I was. Well, this one was bad. This is like my daily commute. It's right by the park in Christopher Square. And the problem is once you're there, you're kind of committed because there's like a park with like a gate and it's like a narrow sidewalk. So you're, you know, right by Joe Coffee and everything. You can't really get out. And then once I realized there was a lot of water in the street, it was too late. And I was just like, three cars came by. And I was like, from my knees down, this is just done. It's done. It's pretty fun though. Cool, man. Well, we've been coding this week a little bit. Coding. I want to talk about something just because it's fresh on my mind. I was hacking on my side project last few days. And, you know, it's basically all the suspense stuff. And then I kind of downgraded back from React 18 because there were some bugs in SWR related to the data fetching stuff. Since the data fetching stuff in suspense is still experimental. And so I couldn't quite use it. But I think on 17 it still works. 18, I think, fixes a lot of bugs with suspense, but again, the data fetching stuff is experimental. So I think like Apollo has a suspense mode as well, right?
There's an issue, a pull request where I think they're going to do like a 3.5 and then a 4.0. But right now, I actually, based on our last few conversations, I wanted to just see if I could turn it on. But there's no mode. There's no mode right now in Apollo to do that.
Apollo doesn't have suspense mode?
I couldn't. All I found was some pull requests for future releases.
Got you. So. Well, SWR has it. It is experimental and everything, but it's been around for like a year or two, you know, and people have been using it like that. So anyway, I'm guessing these libraries that do have it, I think React Query has it as well. I'm sure they're running tests against, you know, React 17. So I would guess that if it's in those libraries, it's okay there. Not for production probably, but side project, sure. React 18 is very new. It's not even beta. It's an alpha. So that's like use at your own risk. Anyways, as I've just been thinking about this and learning about how, you know, just to experiment, I was refactoring my auth provider in my app. And, you know, one of the nice things about suspense is that it kind of nudges you to do some of the data fetching work outside of React, which can make a lot of sense. If it's not really tied to rendering per se. So something like the auth state, which is a global, feels like it makes a lot of sense to do outside of rendering. You know, in my current version of my fitness app, I render this auth provider, which does all this Firebase stuff inside of a use effect. And it was always causing me issues. It would even like crash my app. I mean, it has a cleanup function, but it just was like hard to understand. And, you know, the Firebase stuff like works with this global module scope. Like as soon as you import Firebase, it's just like, just does all this stuff that you don't really have insight into. And so it was kind of nice to be able to just like basically copy the Firebase guide to do it in module scope. So like as soon as that module is loaded, it's just kicking off and setting up Firebase. And then, you know, within the component, I get to provide like the Firebase user, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I also wanted to throw a promise on the initial load of the app and basically say like, for the first render, you know, until I know the state of my auth, I want to suspend. And that's nice because I have two things that need to happen. One is I need to get the Firebase user, which I'm using for auth. And then once I have that, if there is a Firebase user, I can query Hasura for my current user in the users table, which has like my name and my email address. Mm-hmm. So Firebase sets up and then I add like a header to my SWR config. And so that's what that component does. It takes care of all that stuff, right? And it's nice that I can say, okay, a Firebase user hasn't loaded, throw a promise. And then in the auth state changed callback, I can resolve it. And then I go ahead and render like auth inner, and then I make a fetch using SWR for the current user, which also suspends. So from the parent's perspective, it's just waiting and waiting, and then it resolves.
Yep.
So it's kind of interesting, man, because like you go from having the stuff in the use effect was a little hard to understand, had to make sure it only runs once. And, but then it's like, you know, you have access to like closure state. So if the auth provider has like current user, set current user in React state, you can just call set current user and it will re-render and provide all that stuff. And that works.
I think that right there is a key point. So like I worked on a big auth project last year, and this is what we ran into, where we ended up needing to put everything inside of React state because all this stuff could change. And when it did change, we needed to know and we needed to re-render. And so right. you start with it, you know, in module scope, and it's nice and it's clean, and you're just copying from docs and you have no effects and
right.
everything's perfect. But then as soon as you need re-renders, now you start getting into React state and effects, and yeah, it gets really tricky.
Yeah. So I kind of go down this path where I'm like, okay, can I, you know, I'm trying to like play by the mental model. You have a stable cache. So you create like a cache object that's just a module scope. It's just an object. Maybe it has a status property. You know, maybe it has a promise property with that initial promise that you can throw. So you can always throw the same one from the render, from the function if you need to. You can resolve it from Firebase's auth state change callback. And then you can store the current user on it. So that's kind of a different way to think about it. You know, you read from that cache and then you do it. But then like you said, you know, how do you change it? So maybe it's nice to kind of get it set up. And then I was thinking, okay, then you render like this inner thing and you can like see the React state with the default value of the Firebase user. So like you suspend as you get the world set up, and then you just set the current Firebase user with an auth inner to that thing. And then like, then it's like, then you're kind of in this place where you're like, okay, well, what about like on auth state changed? Somehow I need a reference to like set current user. So you kind of try to share it from like the component to like some cache thing or update the handler. It kind of gets weird. So what I did was I already had Zustand in this project. And, you know, the Poimanders like org and Paul Henschel, who wrote like React Spring, has been tweeting a lot about Zustand lately and saying that it's good for global state in React. And he linked to a Sebastian tweet from like a year or two ago where Sebastian basically said, if you only ever use one provider for a context and like you never change the value that's provided, not like the value changes, but you never have both. Basically, you only have one provider. Mm-hmm. You might be you like misusing context. Like it might not be the right tool for the job. And
can you explain that a little?
Yeah, I think he was basically saying like most of my use of context.
Can you give an example? Like what's an example of only providing one thing?
Like a current user. And the current user can change over time, but you only render auth provider once in the app.
Compared to like a form provider that would be rendered with every form.
Exactly. Exactly. Or a video player thing that could be rendered in multiple subtrees. Or a theme provider that themes like a part of the app, but then a part of the other one is like fallback default. So, you know, context is made to be... It's a composable API, right? It works, it operates on subtrees. But most of us end up using context for global state. And so there's like a lot of wiring there. And you have to go through this dance of like, yeah, you have to go back to the root and do it just to get it. You know, we've worked with folks on projects who do need some shared state, and they make a data provider in the root. And again, you're just, it's like this roundabout way to get some shared global state. So Sebastian was saying this, and Paul was saying, you know, something, he thinks that people are moving in this direction of libraries like Zestan and just using module scope for that. If you need shared state, use module scope. Then you need a way, you're back to this problem we talked about, which is how to trigger a re-render because you're not in React state. And so these libraries like Zestan just do that. And they use some event emitter thing under the hood that can notify, but that lets them basically like update state without triggering a re-render right away. And then notifying when it's time to re-render, which is nice because, like, you know how we've talked about before where, you know, maybe we use, we talked about when we were using XState and like we were loading the iframe for the Mirage REPL and it had a few steps to go through, but like each intermediate step was triggering a re-render. So we had to like hide that behind something. But from the perspective of the UI, there really is only one state change. And ideally you could just do some async work and not worry about the re-renders in the intermediate steps. So this is kind of cool because when you operate in module scope outside of React, you can actually do like an async action. It doesn't matter because it's just going to do its event emitter thing at the end of the thing, at the end of all of this async work. So now you have this pattern where it's like, I can actually do things that make sense to be not tied to rendering for this particular component in module scope. And then Zestan lets you create a store, and then you just, it returns a use store function, which you can use as a hook inside of a component. So that's what I did next. I refactored my cache to basically be a store, and I give it the same stuff. It has like a status property, has a promise, but I can call get and set on it as like within the callback of the Firebase hook. And then my my auth provider, my component can just use the store. And then if I have any callbacks, I can just call set, and any other component can use the store and just get a slice of it. It can just use store, store like store.status or store.currentUser. And that's a lot better than trying to use like local variables and setting them to the setter of a React state in order to trigger an update.
I have a question. So are you inside the Zestan, are you like setting up callbacks inside of Zestan, or you set up like you set up Zestan first and then now you go back to module scope and you set up all your callbacks like in module scope and then you just trigger like the Zestan setters? Like which way is it?
The Firebase, you like new Firebase effectively in module scope, and then right next to it you create a store right next to it. And so you can set your initial state in that store. And then you have Firebase. You're still you're not even React yet. And then in Firebase, you import this thing called onAuthStateChanged. And then you can call store.set Firebase user.
That store.set comes from like let store equals create store. You're not like inside of the store. Cool. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. Nice. And you can also create actions within the store that get yielded a setter function that you can use to update state. So you can also have actions that like clear the store or whatever. Sweet. Yeah. So it's pretty awesome. And then it triggers re-renders. So you don't really have to worry about it. So it's almost like you don't even need, I think maybe the next logical step here is not even using a provider. It would just be you have the store. I guess if you want it to suspend, you still want that somewhere, but you might not even need to provide anything. You might just have a component that just uses the store, and while the initial thing is happening, it can throw the promise to suspend. But then after that, I think everyone could just use auth whatever you want to call it. It was just points to the store, and that's fine. And you don't have to worry about providing anything. You don't have to wrap anything. Again, because the provider is not used in multiple places. So it's pretty interesting, man. And it's pretty easy to think about it because like usually with this stuff, you have a few things to set up and you just want to get it set up and handle it. You don't want to be thinking about Am I outside of my provider? Am I re-rendering? Is this effect retrigger? You don't, it's not really that helpful, I think, to think about it in terms of effects.
You have to, as someone that's done this auth thing like three different times with four different services, you have to like deeply think about, okay, this is their imperative code. How do I wire it into my effects? How do I affect rendering? So yeah, I mean, that's, if you can skip over all that and like you have this like sustansor that's like basically acting as your global context, but you're not like responsible for wiring. That's pretty sweet.
It's pretty awesome. So I'm going to push that a little bit farther and hopefully end up with some freaking auth thing that I actually can just use from project to project. Because like you said, I feel like it changes all the time. It's just weird. You're like, you need to do the Firebase thing so you can get the user. So then I can update like my global SWR config. So I have to be within another component in order to even use SWR because I have to be around my SWR config settings in order to get the header. And then I have to fetch the current user. It's just kind of a weird thing, right?
It absolutely is. And just to kind of show this, like there's some of these data fetching libraries in their docs, they just say something like, oh, just throw the token in local storage. And so that the thing that they provide isn't actually reactive to state. It just reads from local storage.
Right.
And so it's just because it's basically like, you know, like reading between the lines. It's like this sort of wiring and state management and sharing across these boundaries is super hard.
Right.
And so if you just like have a local storage that we always fetch from, it just makes it so much easier.
I guess that's always like the counter, right? Which is like the effect stuff forces you to think about how your app should react if anything changes because it's going to rerun. So it's like we always say, it's like front loading that work so that when something changes, you've considered it by design. That's like the idea behind it. But again, yeah, with this stuff, it's like it's pretty hard.
There's a lot of gotchas there too. Like you can imagine going back with like your current user example, like you have a current user and their token, say, because of business requirements, changes every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were providing a fetch function that like basically pre-wires a header with the token.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're using that fetch function inside of an effect.
Mm-hmm.
That fetch function is now going to change every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you kind of have to be thinking about like, oh, what happens when that fetch function changes? Like from you as a developer point of view, like, you don't actually need to refetch the data because like the only thing that changed was the fetch function that has a pre-wired header that has a token that's updating. Like the data itself didn't change.
Right.
But this is like one of the things, this is like one of the big gotchas that hit us when we were doing this. And so it's, I think it's good that you have to think about like, okay, well, I'm using fetch to fetch data, and if fetched changed, then I have to refetch it. Right. I have to, like, from the rules of React, like I have to refetch.
Yeah.
But it's just, part of you just,
it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask
as a developer. Like the data didn't change, they don't care.
Right.
And so if you can push, basically the point I'm trying to get is if you can push all this outside of React,
I think it's easier. Yeah. And like with Firebase, the API is like the only way you get the current Firebase user is with the auth state change hook. So you're already like setting up a listener. So it's already like reactive in that sense, in the sense that if you open up a separate tab and log out, your other tab is going to know about it. So, but it shouldn't be tied to rendering, you know. That's one idea there, which is like whether you're rendered or not, whether a particular component is rendered or not, it's not affect whether or not you have a Firebase user. That's Firebase's concern in the state of the application that's running, not within the React layer. So maybe that's a good pointer. That's like, this should happen to module scope. If you can communicate with a store, like a Zustan store, you can set the current Firebase user. You can know that that will always be up to date. And then any component that needs to render based on the auth state can just use that store, but they don't have to set up any effects or anything like that. You know, because they're not going to re-render. Like, yeah, it's just if the auth state changes, then
it doesn't matter where the render,
but you don't. Yeah, exactly. Well,
if the auth state changes, the auth state changed. It's not if the auth state changed and the app is rendered.
Exactly.
So you don't. That's good. You don't care about render You need it for render, but you don't care about render when you're tracking all this stuff.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. And I wonder if a lot, you know, if you think about the way like SWR works, they have a cache in module scope where they store the values from your queries, the data, the responses and everything. And then the components are basically just pointing to them and getting the re-renders. But like, I wonder how much of the state in our React apps, if you could zoom forward 5 years and React has like a use store, you know, a create store function that's basically mm-hmm. Zestand. And I wonder how much of the state would move outside of React and just have hooks that reference it. You know, it is open or is closed or a form state. You know, you want that tied to the component because when you unrender the component, it's like you want it reset. You know, sometimes you don't. Like, sometimes even on a form for like a GitHub comment, you would want to maybe save it. And so you do this like local storage thing. It might be easier. Well, that's about refreshing the page, let's say. But it still might be easier to like put it in a store. There's like a lot of state that maybe should be in stores outside of React.
I'm sorry, I'm having flashback to like 3 years ago when we're going to put everything in Redux.
You know? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was painful. I mean, you know, I mean, I never did that. So I dodged that bullet, but.
I guess that's fair if it wasn't painful.
Yeah.
You didn't have to like.
create a reducer.
Like, to find out if your checkbox is checked.
Yeah. 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 No, it's basically almost equivalent to using local state from a DX perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I mean, yeah, like a lot of stuff, like there's like app state that's like, you know, the transient state is checked,
mm-hmm.
what's focused, you know, all the stuff you're setting in React. But then there's also, you know, what do we call it? We have a word for this, like application state or, like remote state, like database state from remote servers. Yeah. And maybe that sort of stuff ends up in these stores, users from Firebase. So yeah, it would be interesting.
Right. But yeah, I think it's really cool library. So if you haven't tried it, check it out. We'll put a link to it in the notes. But it's really good. It's really minimal. It's really good. Cool. You want to talk about this safeguarding_app and next?
Yeah. I guess you were the one that kind of ran into this. So do you want to kick it off?
Yeah. So we've been working on some next projects this summer with some different teams and learning a lot about, you know, the way they do the router. And it can be surprising, even if you've worked with Next before, just the way some of it works. And one way that I've learned is the best way to understand Next is to understand like the architecture decisions it has and what decisions they made and what problems they're trying to solve. And the problems they're trying to solve are like kind of first and foremost helping build like large websites that can kind of scale, for lack of a better term. So if you think about create React app or, you know, Ember or Angular or kind of the classic SPA model where you just have a big bundle, those, you could say, again, for lack of a better term, don't scale in the sense that as the people are working on them and adding them, you're loading this huge JavaScript bundle. You get the benefits of client-side rendering, but it just grows and grows. So obviously, like, then code splitting came out, all these things to help solve the problem. But Next basically took that approach, that problem kind of squarely on, right? And said, what we're going to do is make each page an entry point, similar to like a Rails application. And that's just going to be like a constraint that we adopt from the beginning. And so every page is like a new entry point. So instead of thinking about it as like a bundle, you have each page is separate. Now, once you load a page, you do navigate between pages on the client only, but it's fetching only what you need for that page. So part of this also is so that you have different pages that you can server render. Like server rendering is a huge part of this because you want it to, again, be as close to like the Rails model as possible. If you're making an Amazon web-like website where you have tons of public product pages, you want ideally an HTML file for each page. Like that would be, if you could snap your fingers, what you would do, because HTML files are like the easiest thing to serve and cache and distribute to edge networks like CDNs. And
parse for bots.
And right, exactly. So that's like something that's good I've found to keep in the back of your mind as you're learning like the next APIs. The one in particular we kept running into and seemed to trip teams up was like, and even us up, was like this router, the way the router works. So if you have a dynamic segment in your URL, like you have product/ID, you know, again, if you're thinking about it like an Ember app or a React app, you would think like, okay, when I render this page, I can like get the router and get what the ID is. You know, in like Gatsby, the params for the ID come through in the page prop. So like when you render a page, you can just do like props.pid or whatever you call that segment, right? And so it's not going to even render. React's not going to even render that page until it knows what the URL is. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, why would we not do that? Well, the reason you not do that, again, comes back to the server rendering bit. So if you have an app set up with product/ID and you're going to have an unknown number of products that are coming from a database at runtime, again, thinking about what does Next have to do to make this fast? Well, it needs to generate a page for this at server time, at build time on the server. So it's going to render literally a page with like bracket ID.html, let's say. And because it wants to be able to serve up an HTML page as fast as possible for every request, that's the page is going to do. And so when React renders on the server, you don't know what the ID is because it's before it's known.
On the server, at build time.
At build time. And this is assuming like you're not fetching the data at on the server either, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a build time page that you generate, which is like, you know, $X variable for the ID or whatever. So you need to be able to tell React what to render. React needs to render a frame here because it's generating this page at build time. So you have to basically account for the situation where we know we're on a product page, but we don't have the ID.
Yep.
And that explains why
we're like pre-generating the HTML that all products will use.
Yes.
So we don't have the ID. Like,
yes, exactly. So this explains why when you use router in Next and you try to get router.query.id, the first frame is going to be blank. That's why. So that was like an aha moment.
Yeah.
And it also happens on the client because that's where it's confusing, because most of us are just thinking in terms of the client because you just are developing in the client and you're using the dev tools in the client. So you go to load this thing in the client and the query is undefined and you're just like, I don't get it. So then you start saying all this like router.?query. How do I render this without a thing? Whatever, right? And the reason is because you need to match. Next could decide to render on the client once you know it, but it needs to match the server on that first frame of the render. So that is exactly why it's all motivated by this idea of wanting to let people generate an HTML shell of a dynamic page at build time.
Yeah, really two things: that letting people generate the shell page, and then making sure that you serve that and that the first render of the React app matches the thing
exactly
that you served.
So then it's confusing because the behavior of router.query can change and use router can change based on what other work you might be doing at build time. So let's say you only have 100 products, or it's like a blog post and you want to just pre-generate your blog post at build time.
Stick with products. I like
products. So you only have 100 products in your store and you're like, well, I don't have to wait until runtime. I can just run through my 100 products and build 100 HTML pages. In that way, every page will be super fast. I can have like rich OG tags that, you know, because the server is going to be able to have the product generated in the HTML already. It doesn't have to run anything on the server. It's still just static and it's super fast, right? So there's this get static paths hook that Next gives you. So if you implement that on a page, you can say, here's all the 100 products. Here's all the possible values of this dynamic segment. It's basically like going through and making a page for each thing, but you don't have to do it. It's just like a way to programmatically do that.
Yeah, and instead of getting like bracket ID, close bracket dot HTML, you're actually going to get like 1.html, 2.html, right. 3.html.
Exactly.
And now...
And then, yeah, now, so even on the server, you don't get the frame where router.query is undefined. Because think about it. You're visiting /product/2. Oh, I know it's 2. I know it at build time. This is the page I'm going to serve up when someone makes a request to product/2. It's this page right here. I know it's 2. So now you don't have a frame where it's unknown.
Hey, that's a really great... What you just said, this is a page that I'm going to serve up. That's a great way to think about what params do I have available. Like when I'm working on the client side, exactly. I can say, what params do I have available? Well, how is my, like, am I using get static props, get static paths? Like what is a page based on my page component? What is the HTML that's going to be served up? And that's a way for me to kind of back into what's going to be available on the first render.
Yep. Which is kind of hard. It's kind of a lot to ask a front end developer who's just trying to make a page. Like, you know what I'm saying? Using a hook and rendering something on the client, you have to like put themselves in a different mentality. There's a lot to understand here. There's this build process that's happening in the server at build time. Whenever we deploy, we're going to be like pushing it out to our servers to serve it up.
We could be just doing like bracket ID dot HTML. We could be doing like 1.html. Also with fallback true, we could be doing both.
Exactly. So then you can do fallback where you can say, oh, I have 10 products I want to pre-gen, but the other 90, or it could be 90, it could be 9,000, change all the time. So for those ones, I'm going to serve up bracket ID. For these first 10, I'm going to serve up the specific page. And so now you go back to the behavior where router.query isn't known, I think, on the first render, or maybe it is for the static paths. I don't even know, actually. I think it might be known for the static ones, but not known for the fallback. So then you still, and you're just writing a product page. Like from the developer's perspective, you're building the product page, and now you're having to think about all this stuff. So the idea there, I think the charitable explanation here, well, this is the true explanation. It's also the charitable thing. And then you kind of have like the con side of it. But the pro side is that it's front loading this work onto your team so that you're forced to deal with it so that you can have faster pages once you're ready to go. If you start with create a React app and you're only building a React app that only renders on the client, and you're going to have access to so much more information that if you get to a point where your site is slow and you want to pre-generate some pages so that they're fast and they have OG tags and all this stuff, it's going to be a lot of work if you have been considering it the whole time. Whereas Next is kind of front loading some of that work to force you to think about it, and choosing to start building some of your dynamic pages more statically so that they can actually be generated at build time. It's a much smaller leap when you're already in Next. So I think that's like the pros of these API designs that force you to deal with this stuff. You know, you have to deal with type of when, like you're just building a new Next app and you use some library, you're just building like a tic-tac-toe thing. And then it's like Windows not defined, your app breaks. You're like, what am I doing here? This kind of sucks. Right. But it's pre-rendering everything in the server unless you opt out of it. So again, it's front loading that burden. So you're forced to consider it upfront. Now, the cons are that it front loads it. And sometimes you're building apps that don't care about that. Like you're building a user specific thing and it's for a back office app, or it's some checkout flow, or it's just something that's specific to the user. And we don't care about server rendering a skeleton view.
Dude, we had a conversation about this a few months ago where I was describing how I just render a blank screen before I have the current user. And I was saying, one of my questions was like, am I being like a bad Next citizen by like, I'm just like literally every page that's server rendered is just going to be a blank screen HTML file. Because I have a hook in my app component that doesn't render until it's async effect.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like, it's like not having a server. It's not having SSR basically. Right. It's you're shipping a bundle. You're shipping an empty HTML with a JavaScript bundle. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, I get the benefits in Next that it's like every page is code split and all that.
Right.
But yes. Yeah. It is. Yes. Essentially not having SSR. It's just blank page JavaScript.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, I feel like maybe there's a way that they could surface it better, but I think it's totally fine especially if you don't need those things, to not have to play by those rules. This is where it keeps, it was hurting the recent project I was working on, was that instead of, like, in the case of product slash product ID, it makes a lot of sense. You have this whole control over which product IDs I'm rendering, which ones I know ahead of time, which ones I need to wait until runtime. What if you have, like, something like language, you know, language slash language code in the URL, or, you know, some like server host, like you have some dynamic token that's at the beginning of the URL. I know Next has like internationalization patterns and all that stuff, but just take something for your domain, like a server name, server group, you know, SO1, SO2, SO3. That's a dynamic segment that's like at the very beginning of your URL for every page. Right. And let's even say that you know what it is, but because every page is separate, now every page is going to get this funky behavior where you don't know, you need to render a frame where you don't know what the server is. And then if you do, every page would have to implement get static paths on its own. Or the alternative is, in the root of underscore app, you do something where you don't render the page component until the router is ready and you have the query, the params from the URL. So I think that could be called out more, basically, for teams who, yeah, the skeleton screen is not, it's not worth the effort. It's not even valuable for this project.
It's not a requirement of the project. I mean,
it's not a requirement of the project. And the cost of having to think about it on every single page you're developing and having to account for what is the server rendered version of this going to be when you're doing maybe something that doesn't even make sense. And it doesn't matter. You just really want a loading spinner. So that's kind of what we've been doing, where in underscore app, and the router has this nice little is ready flag on it, which means it's now parsed the URL. It's read what the queries are. And it's never going to be ready on the server in that case, I guess. So if the router's not ready, you render a loading spinner in underscore app. Otherwise, you render the page component. And now every page in the app can just use the router, use router.query, and they don't have to account for a frame when the router query isn't, the params aren't known.
Yeah. It's I really like this pattern for when... if you have data that you expect to always exist and you can't render without this data, rather than trying to juggle like, oh, well, I'm still figuring out this data, just say in your app component, basically the rest of my app is guarded from this. And there, like you pointed out, there are trade-offs. You can't do a skeleton screen. You can't do like custom loading per page.
Right.
You know, your app underscore app controls all the rendering for your app.
Right.
But you know, if you're building like an internal tool, and your app can't exist without a current user, then you just don't have to juggle that. Now.
You don't have to think about it. I mean, even I think a lot of apps actually do this. You think about like Twitter is like user specific data. I mean, there's public versions of the tweets, so that's fine, I guess. I guess on the web, if you had a tweet, you could imagine rendering that. And if it's a popular one, you could use like the incremental static thing and you could CDN that. But for the app's perspective, and I guess that's the point, right? But for when you open the app, you just look at the Twitter logo until your feed is ready. So that needs your current user and it needs to make that data request. You're not showing a skeleton screen necessarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is why Next is cool, because you can start to opt into that for certain pages. But yeah, it's
Exactly. Like we've done this too, where like in the underscore app JS, you have like pages that I can't render until I have all my data. And that's like a list of pages. And then, you know, we have another array that's like public pages that we can just go ahead and pre-render. And yeah, that is a really cool thing that, you know, we're finding a way to like deal with like the front loading complexity, but then also like using app.js to control which pages we actually care about this for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be nice to have like a guide on this. But yeah, I think because you have to understand all of this in order to do this for your app, for your team. But it would be nice for the beginning, or to be able to put some guards in and just say, yep, we're not worried about server rendering right now. We don't ever want our developers to encounter like errors with window or whatever. Because we don't, that's not, again, a requirement.
It's like, it's deeper than that because it's, it goes back to like the ID and like you serving like bracket ID, close bracket dot HTML. So therefore you don't know the ID, but like you could say like, oh, well, this is like client side app. When I render this, I'm always going to know the ID. I don't need to worry about, about matching the server render. I mean, you like, you do need to match a server render because of React, but you can say like, okay, server render, just blank frame. And then my client will hydrate. And I'm aware of the trade-offs I'm making. I'm not going to have OG tags. I'm not going to have skeleton screens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's just, it's different. It's like a different level of abstraction that you're forcing the app dev to consider when it's really not relevant for what they're trying to do.
Yeah. You know, I think if I was like, if I was working with a team where this, like, we kept running into this, I know like you kind of are and like why it's been so top of mind. I think I might push towards, we've talked about this, like, having a state machine in our app.js where we can be like, we can be like very declarative about when certain pages render. So I might have like, you know, slash about us, and that's like public true, and that thing can be pre-rendered. And then, but then I might have like slash account slash settings, and I don't know, maybe there's like a declarative way where I can say like user true, and it knows it can't, like app.js is going to have some guard that knows it won't render that like capital C page component until it has a user that whatever my use auth, use user hook is using.
Yep. No, totally. I mean, we ran into this with EmberMap when we started. We did run into wanting to server render it to make the page faster. But then you add that and you're forced to consider all these other pages, which you had been coding the entire time, assuming you had the current user. Now you don't have the current user on the server. What are you going to do? And so these are two different things, and it would be nice to be able to start pulling pieces out that you want to be fast, your marketing pages or whatever. We've seen teams do that too with Ember. Mm-hmm. They really want their marketing page to be fast. You can just do that in one way, but then, yeah, it's, there's some nice API at the root, which can just, and it's nice that next, it's very low level. That's why you have to understand this, but you can also kind of make any mechanism you want to deal with this.
Oh, it's awesome because we're already talking about ways to build guards and
right, exactly. So, but yeah, I just think that was important. That was good to us to go through that exercise and to crystallize like, hey, you don't want this defensive code everywhere. People shouldn't be having effects that are on like checking if the router is ready. And it's just because they're getting confused by the fact that they render something and they don't know whether they're in server 01 or server 02. Like, that's just weird. Like, this page doesn't make sense to render without that. So you want to guard that ahead of time, you know? Yeah. Your account settings page is going to query like whether, you know, what your settings are, whether you have email notifications. You don't want to be like, oh, well, and I don't have my current user, so what is this going to be? You just, you know, you want a way, at least you want a way, if you, that's what you choose, to let people develop those pages without that stuff.
Yeah. This page doesn't make sense to render without this data. It's a good, good little.
Right.
Put it in
right.
The
whereas a tweet does potentially, because you want to be able to share it, mm-hmm. Regardless of who the user is, you know, but your settings, you know, your dashboard for your budgeting software, let's just, have some considered loading screen. That's like, that's what I'm trying to get with all this like suspense stuff too, which I'm still working on. But like, I want to have, yeah, a nice way to have a loading screen that's like handled in the app root for any page. And then any page that makes a data request, it's effectively doing the same thing. You know, it just throws a promise when it doesn't have it. But that way the rest of the component never has to care if I don't have all that stuff. And because the current user fetch throws a promise too, it's never going to render that stuff, which is great. You know what happens on the server, by the way?
I don't know. This is one of the things I want to understand.
In my app, I do if type of windows undefined, then just return empty fragment or whatever. Because I think SSR with suspense came out in React 8, comes out in React 18, but I don't actually know what it does.
Gotcha. So like, I mean, maybe you can throw a promise and it just renders the fallback component.
The fallback. Mm-hmm.
That'd be nice. That's what like my mental model's talking about. I have no idea.
Yep.
I mean, given that like you're not supposed to have side effects unless they're in like use effect, like you could conceptually be like, it doesn't matter if the server starts rendering a bunch of components and then renders a throws all that away and renders a fallback.
Right.
Same for the client side, but
yeah,
it would be good to tell.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. React is really cool. There's a lot of stuff. Like the primitives, there's really only a few use state, use effect, rendering. It's basically all there is. And then you have all these problems. And it can be tempting and easy for any developers, no matter where they are on in terms of experience with it, to just start reaching for these things. And they kind of solve the immediate problems. There's just not a lot of guardrails in Next or in React. There's not a lot of like docs you can read on the first party sites for how to solve these things, you know?
I think, I mean, just like kind of
the Rails way there's not a lot of that.
Yeah. Definitely what we've learned in kind of like the last 6 months is like when you're this whole thing about, we're talking about guarding app.js, it's really for like apps. We're not building like content sites. It's really for like data we don't want on a CDN. We might want like a shell somewhere, but like for the most part. And so it'd be good to like, I think that's how you kind of introduce this, is you talk about like, okay, so here are some patterns that would be good when you're building like an app in Next. And then, you know,
user specific data, you know, mutations, all that kind of stuff.
And then like you have a ramp here from like guarding the render in app.js, but you also have a path where like, you know, I can get like the sickest skeleton screen.
Yeah.
That's like, it's like you're viewing like the Gmail email client, but it's all skeleton-y, and then your data just fills in. So you're not saying like you can never get there, but you're just saying like, here's a ramp and you start at the bottom of the ramp with the guards.
That's the thing. That's I think that if I have a complaint right now, it's that you're forced to start at the top of it and opt into that complexity when for many, maybe most apps and teams, it's not worth it. It's not going to happen. Like the skeleton stuff, as we talked about in the last few weeks, takes more time and effort. But it would be better, even if it is, it'd be better to add that on later after you get everything working. And you want to start with just the simpler case. I'm just adding more states to your app, you know?
Yeah, we should next app we work on, we should like start thinking about like how that state machine would work and how it could compose with like other like use auth and use data and whatever. But just thinking about like how could we guard this?
Totally. And you want like a use query, you know, that's just, you want to smooth these things. It feels like a lot of times it feels like when you're working on a vanilla Next React app, you're in like library author land when you really want libraries that are doing this. I want a use query hook that's going to get its header set up with the current user, and I don't want to have to think about those four frames at the beginning of my app that are setting that up. That's not really something I want to think about.
I mean, maybe like this is just like, oh well, that like you were saying, like your use user throws a promise, and so like you never, you can actually never render this without the user, and
I think all that of our that is what I'd like
go away.
No, totally. That is one thing that's nice about. I think that's what I'm most excited about, to see if Suspense delivers on the ability to reduce some of the complexity by hiding all those. That's like another way to hide those intermediate states, versus another way would be like Zustand or async actions in Zustand or a state machine outside of React that's doing all that stuff and then triggering a re-render only when it's relevant for the UI, you know? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it ends up.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, should we wrap it?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is Front End First. I'm Sam.
I'm Ryan.
And,
where we do the introductions at the end.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you want to put like the stuff, the boring stuff at the end, so that if they make it there, they only get the people who made it all the way through deserve it. That doesn't really make any sense. Yeah, but anyways. No, this is where you pitch something. Here, we have a product to sell, except we don't have anything to sell. So we're just here for our lovely dulcet tones in your earbuds. And we'll be there next week if you care to join us. So thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.